Thank you. So we're going to end up this session by talking a little bit about some of the work that has been occurring in how we've been institutionalizing and promoting FAD throughout public health programs and some of the work that we've been doing through CDC. You've been hearing this disclaimer probably at every session. I do have one disclaimer I want to share, and that's for those of you who are at the previous session, you're going to hear a few see a little bit of redundancy with some of my slides. However, I'm going to try and do some different examples and mix it up a little bit. And hopefully I'm not going to have a disclaimer on every single slide like Les did. So CDC's role in accreditation and supporting accreditation, I believe you heard from Kay and Carol that, of course, we have been co-supporting FAB since the very beginning with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and of course many other national partner organizations have been very involved, especially in the accreditation readiness area and technical assistance. NACHO and ASTO, the National Network of Public Health Institutes, APHA, everyone knows APHA. But what I really want to emphasize and talk about for the next 15 minutes or so are these last three bullets, talking about what we've been doing through NIFI, the National Public Health Improvement Initiative, how we've been building connections across CDC in different CDC and programmatic supported areas, and then how that relates to establishing incentives. Accreditation is a voluntary program, but incentives are important. You need incentives and support for preparing for accreditation, and then once you have that plaque on the wall, it's nice, but so what? What else? What other reasons are there for getting accredited? So first, very briefly, how many of you are familiar with NIFI or involved with the National Public Health Improvement Initiative? Okay, good. I see quite a few hands. I also see a few folks not with hands up. Well, for those of you who are not too familiar with it, you'll be excited to know that this is something that we've been able to have. It's a fairly unprecedented opportunity and program from CDC in that it's a non-categorical cooperative agreement that through which we've been able to put a lot of funding, and this is ACA, PPHF funding, out to the field. And the three objectives, three of the key objectives of NIFI, one of those is to accelerate public health accreditation readiness. And the national standards, the accreditation standards, are being used as a frame for health department grantees to really look at where are you meeting these standards, where do you have big gaps, and that can help to drive the work plan that they're focusing in on NIFI. There's also a very big focus in the NIFI cooperative agreement guidance on both performance management and quality improvement. You heard a lot from Les about QI and performance management, and so we're really driving towards a lot of that same support. One of the other objectives and capacity building areas that we've been able to accomplish through NIFI, right from the inception of this program, we required either hiring or designating a performance improvement manager. And this is intended to be someone established at a fairly high level, ideally in the commissioner's office or in a cross-cutting role in the health department that works across the health department to be really the point person on quality improvement and accreditation readiness activities and to work across all those categorical programs. And we have built a network to build connections among those performance improvement managers. We call it the PIM network. And so that has really established a really nice learning community and opportunity for sharing of lessons learned and successes. And I think that has been really great for, of course, the state and the local grantees, but the tribal and the territorial grantees, I think that's been especially instrumental. That's something that there's been a lot of learning and bringing some new lessons learned and opportunities because we have a real diversity of grantees in regards to where they are with looking at the standards and preparing for accreditation and use of quality improvement, and everyone has something to share, and that's been really exciting to see how that's been shared among the PIM network. Quickly, I'll share that this is just a map of our NIFI awardees. If you go on CDC's website on our NIFI NIFI page. This is actually an interactive map. You can put your cursor over it and get information about who some of the key contacts are and what some of the key focus areas are, and also the amount of funding for each of the awardees. So we've just entered year four of a five-year cooperative agreement, and that has been, I think, really nicely aligned in regards to timing with, of course, the establishment of FAD. But what I want to spend a lot of time talking about are, of course, the strategic and programmatic connections that we're trying to build between accreditation and the many silos and programmatic and categorical areas that we really think of when a lot of folks think about what public health is all about. So how do those FAB standards and measures and the expectations of accreditation support and build the foundation for strong programs and activities, and vice versa? How do we make investments in these categorical areas that help to build the capacity to meet those standards and measures? So making that really nicely mutually reinforcing. Here are a variety of areas in which we have been working to build programmatic and strategic connections. And I'm going to talk about a variety of these as I go through some of my examples. But if you want to ask questions about any of these, if we have any time for Q&A or afterwards, I urge you to do so. One of the most exciting accomplishments I think that we have been able to do at CDC is that we have, as of last October, so a year ago, we have now a standardized template and guidance for all funding opportunity announcements for our domestic non-research FOAs. Those of you who have worked with CDC for years may know that prior to that point, you would get FOAs from one area of CDC that would look really different from FOAs from a different area. And we all know that that's not necessarily easy to deal with. And so working with the field, working with our procurement and grants office and across CDC, a group led an effort to develop a standard template and guidance. And they did a really nice job. I was tangentially involved and then more recently a victim of that when I had to help to put together an FOA using the template of that. And it's a really, I'm not saying that just because I'm from CDC, I'm probably expected to say that, but I think it's done a really nice job. And this link here that I have up is an example of one of the FOAs that went out using that new template, and that's from the STD area. You're going to see a lot of quality improvement expectations. You're going to see a lot of emphasis on measurement and accountability. And very excitingly, you're going to see a clear link with accreditation. So in the organizational capacity statement section, this is an exact quote from this, in that applicants can describe their current status in applying for health department accreditation or evidence of accreditation status. And FAB is mentioned particularly. But perhaps even more valuable is the connection that was made in the budget narrative section, because we all know that funding is really what matters, the budget narrative section of the FOA. And again, you can see this in that same FOA on page 49, so I cite it. But so as long as it's within the consistent with the statutory authority and the spirit and intent of the FOA, you can be looking for, well, we have these gaps in meeting FAB standards, and that's something that really meshes nicely with what we need to do for STDs or our preparedness work. And you can be using that as a synergistic opportunity for that categorical investment. So this is a really nice way to leverage a lot of those investments across CDC and build that foundation and that infrastructure in a way that makes sense. But how else have we been building connections? You heard Carol talk a little earlier about some of the work that FAB's been doing with think tanks and trying to drive towards the future revisions. That's something that CDC's been engaged in pretty heavily, and especially where we have subject matter expertise or some of our CIO centers, institutes, or offices that have a lot to offer. And so the picture that you see here is the recent chronic disease think tank. That's a great example of one. And that happened a couple days before the shutdown, so it was very well timed also. That's the first of probably several think tanks that will occur in regards to chronic disease. But we had folks from numerous areas across CDC who represented multiple programmatic areas and multiple investments in chronic. And we were really looking at, well, what are the connections with the FOAs that chronic puts out, and how does that relate to the standards and measures, and how can we make this more of an expectation? And of course, that work will continue. But I think also building that appreciation at CDC for what accreditation means at the same time as looking at those clear connections is important. You see informatics and health equity. Obviously, these are areas where the field continues to evolve. So having those think tanks to drive the 1.5 and that long-term trajectory of how that will change over time, I think has been really important. So just a couple of examples on that. But another way that we've been building those connections and trying to make synergies is through the development of crosswalks. And I mentioned before that we are trying to build these synergies. Well, crosswalks is often a really clear way we could say there's programmatic standards, we have program requirements, there's guidance documents that you see coming from different areas. How does that mesh with the expectations of the FAB standards? And so, for example, in preparedness, we've done this with the FEP capabilities, the public health emergency preparedness capabilities. NATO has done a really nice job looking at how the FAB standards crosswalks with Project Public Health Ready, which is a certification in regards to emergency preparedness for public health departments. We're also looking at this for EMAP, the Emergency Management Accreditation Program. Les already talked a little bit about Baldrige. He didn't mention the fact that there is a crosswalk between the FAB standards and Baldrige, and that's a little picture of the website. So this is up online, so something you can go find afterwards. But very exciting, as of today, I think today is the official launch, right, Star? We have a new crosswalk available, and this is something that we've been working on for far longer than we perhaps want to admit. NACHO, the Community Guide Branch, and Star Banks is here from that. Shauna Mercer's floating somewhere around APHA, and OSTILT. We collaborated to develop a crosswalk between the evidence-based practices represented and recommended by the Community Guide and the FAB standards. And this is, we think, hugely exciting because this is an opportunity for health departments to really be able to see what are the evidence-based practices that I can use to identify possible areas for documentation to meet standards and measures, but it also increases awareness of evidence-based practices that could be used in areas that you may be wanting to do some QI in. So this is now newly available. It's literally going up today on the website, or it's already up today on the website. And if you were in the previous session, you probably may have walked away with a copy. Afterwards, if you want, we have probably about 10 or so copies to give away if you're really interested. But it looks like this. It's really in-depth because there are two different tables as part of it. So the first table, crosswalks for each of the domains, what are the evidence-based recommendations, the guide recommendations that may relate to that domain. And then on table two, it goes through the different community guide topic areas and then talks about those domain standards and measures that might be relevant. We think table two may be especially helpful because in regards to connecting with some of the programmatic folks in your health department. So if you have asthma program director, having them look at the asthma section of the community guide crosswalk, they can actually see, okay, how does this relate to some of the evidence-based practices I've been working with in my program and what I might be able to give that pesky accreditation coordinator who keeps bothering me. So The last thing I want to mention in regards to building connections is that we think there's a lot to be said around building communications and awareness. How many of you work with project officers, whether it be at CDC or maybe funding officers from foundations or states? I'm sure, or you know, whoever you're dealing with. It is probably very frustrating when you're doing something that you think is very exciting and that you think has a lot of meaning, and they have no idea what you're talking about. Well, we have about 3,000 folks across CDC who are involved in some way, shape, or form as either project officers or oversight of project officers. And having those individuals aware of accreditation and aware of the value of accreditation can have so much value for their appreciation for what health departments are trying to do. So we've been doing webinars. We have it's called the Technical Assistance Services Improvement Initiative. We come up with these lengthy names that you can barely tell what they're all about. But we have this initiative across CDC for improving the project officer support and cross connections across CDC. And through that, accreditation has been one of those topics that we've been talking about a lot. And so having better awareness among project officers, as well as the field staff and the fellows that we put out in the field, we think that can help. And a lot of field staff we know are actually working in accreditation readiness areas. Are any folks that are in health departments, do you have public health associates? Okay, that's great. So that's out of our office too, the public health associates and public health prevention specialists. And we know from working with them that many of those are either directly or in some cases a little bit tangentially involved in accreditation readiness work. And that makes sense because here you have these individuals there for 2 years and you have something that you want to, you're doing your accreditation readiness work and you realize, oh my gosh, for the next year or two, we've got a lot of work to pull together. This is some additional support that can help in what requires some additional workload. And having those individuals there is a great incentive or support for preparing for accreditation. Reaching the grantees through those categorical areas is another thing that we recognize has value. So presenting at grantee meetings in about 2 weeks, I'm actually going to be talking as a plenary speaker at the HAI, Healthcare Associated Infections grantee meeting at CDC, and that's a winnable battle. So Dr. Frieden actually likes that kind of connection, and that's also helping with thinking about what this means when we are getting at that public health healthcare integration opportunity as well. Les already mentioned the accreditation special issue. There's also research and publications going on elsewhere. And a couple weeks ago, early October, the Journal of Environmental Health put out their latest issue. And there's a great column in there that includes some information about how accreditation standards mesh and synergize with the protocol, the PACH, the Protocol for Assessing Community Environmental Health, and environmental health standards. And that was something that was put out by me, Greg, and folks from Florida, and some of the individuals from the National Center for Environmental Health. So we are excited just to continue to see some of that awareness building throughout the publications. So diving in deep on one example, I just want to talk a little bit about emergency preparedness. Talked a little bit about the think tanks already. This is one where we've done multiple think tanks and we'll continue to do more. I said I wasn't going to have too many disclaimers like Les, but I do have a typo on this in that we had one in June of 2012 and there's going to be another in 2014. We did have a discussion or a conference call in October of 2013. So that was a little bit of an edit. But anyway, so that's an ongoing discussion about how can we continue to strengthen and synergize emergency preparedness, because it makes sense that you want FAB standards to really reinforce the expectations of health departments and preparedness areas, but we want those preparedness investments to strengthen those FAB standards. And emergency operations plans, investigations, after action reports, lab access, all of these things that are so the bread and butter of what preparedness is are also very much the bread and butter of what is represented in the Health Department standards for accreditation. We did a fairly in-depth crosswalk between FAB and the public health emergency preparedness capabilities, those STEP capabilities that are expected of CDC grantees. It's a pretty thick crosswalk, but we also took the results and then we did a little bit of a network analysis diagram. And I realize you can't see all the numbers and the lines and everything on this, but I wanted to show you this because it was what I think is a really nice visual depiction of the fact that there's a lot of synergies in certain areas. The triangles represent the FAB standards, and the little circles represent the FEP capabilities. And the bigger the triangle, the bigger the connection. And of course, then connections are also shown by the darkness of the lines. So 5.4 is one of those biggest triangles. Those of you who are familiar with the FAB standards know that that's the one on emergency response planning. So some of this is quite common sense. 8.2 is one of the ones, of course, in workforce, domain 8 on workforce. That there's a lot of connections on that, but there's a lot of very light gray lines. That's because the connection's a little bit more indirect. There's a lot of expectations in the FEP capabilities about training and about workforce, but in the FAB standards, there isn't that direct language about exactly what kind of preparedness training or what kind of workforce certifications in regards to preparedness that's required. So that actually highlighted an opportunity for making that as a opportunity for example. Those in domain 2 are also ones that if you could see this a little bit better, you'd see as fairly prominent connections, and that relates to surveillance and investigation. I want to mention that there are individuals in North Carolina at UNC who have been using their PERC, the CDC preparedness research dollars, to do a lot of work looking at the link between accreditation and preparedness. Some of you may know that North Carolina was one of those pioneer states that had a state-based accreditation program before FAB came along. So that was an opportunity to look at what has happened in North Carolina and really look at that link and that impact of accreditation using preparedness and some of their research. And you can see a lot, if you use this link, you can see a lot of what they're doing now as well as the results of past research. They found, for example, a statistically significant difference between accredited and non-accredited health departments and H1N1 activities and the scope of emergency response activities. So we think that's pretty exciting. We continue to do some work in this area, such as trying to explore the possible connections with the preparedness index, which is being developed, as well as the Emergency Management Accreditation Program. So I am going to stop there because we definitely want time, at least for a little bit of questions. So thank you.
So a lot going on as accreditation and QI continues to grow and develop. We do have time now for interaction with these folks, and so questions, comments, tomatoes to throw, things that you heard a little bit about that you'd like to know more about. Yeah, Jim Franco.
Did you find language show are those statements then weighted when it comes to the determination for the funding? Do they carry weight in the final scoring of those applications, or just for informational purposes?
Well, so a lot of CDC SLAs are, of course, formulaic, and you're talking about maybe for competitive cooperative agreements, obviously. That would obviously be looked at and be considered. The program that's developing at FOA would be thinking about that, but that's not a required part or a standard part of the process. So the fact that that's in there as part of the organizational capacity statement certainly speaks to something that the health department.
Yeah. That led them to become accredited. Leadership, certainly, if not number one, I would say it is number one. We've got several health departments, as you know, in the room that are accredited. In all of those cases, it was that the health department director and the chair of the board or the governance piece said, we're going to do this, we think it's the right thing to do, and set the tone for it, not in a dictatorial way, but in a team-building kind of way. So certainly leadership. Second, and this is me talking, but I wrote about this in one of our newsletters, so I guess it's documented at this point. But it's still my opinion. I think the second thing is the health departments that are either accredited or in the queue to be accredited are just flat willing to take a risk. And it is, they're risk takers in other ways. I mean, you see them doing all kinds of things that put their work out for review. But there is a risk to a health department to put their work out for peers to look at it and, you know, to have their work commented on. And so I think that I would say that's probably the second characteristic is they've either figured out that, you know, at the end of the day, they'll be better for that conversation, or they've gotten really thick skin about comments and it doesn't seem to bother them. And the third is maybe resources, but not necessarily totally fiscal. You know, to work on accreditation in QI is a commitment of time as much as anything. And so I said in the other session, and it is an interesting observation, in these tough economic times, there are health departments that have used that as their platform for being able to say, what do we want to look like on the other side of whatever this economic downturn is, and they've used the accreditation QI walk as a way to do that. And there are others who sort of retreat and say, when this is over, we'll work on it. And so it's the former characteristic. But also then through all three of those, they've managed to figure out how to budget the fees. And Georgia, I'm going to quote him because he does so well. Georgia, I told her, she taught her Board of Health chair well. He's a great learner. He's a business owner in her area. And somebody at the National Association of Local Boards of Health asked him, how did you budget for the fees? And he said, we budgeted as cost of doing business. It's no different than paying the utility bill. So that pretty much says a lot about the leadership working with the decision makers at, for the resource piece. Did that... No, it's too early. Yeah, you saw in our logic model that we certainly are moving through that trajectory of the identification, translation, and use of evidence-based practice. And then the next piece is to measure the impact. So, you know, but it's far too early to say what the effect on health outcomes will be. It's just too early. We do have that in built in, but it's too early. Yeah, so I want to, while he's here, thank Lloyd Novick, who is in the room. Lloyd's the editor of the Journal of Public Health Management. Lloyd is the Journal of Public Health Management Practice. And you know, they could have chosen any number of topics to start their 20th anniversary. And so I think not only does FAB appreciate the fact that they chose accreditation and the link to QI, but I think the field will appreciate it. Having that documentation for you back at home will be immensely important. We are going to work with Lloyd to make a big deal when that's ready, and so you'll hear more about that. Also, thanks to the support from CDC, we're going to be able collectively to make both hard copy and free online access available But I'll put the plug in for the journal. We use a lot at FAB, and I used it a lot when I wasn't at FAB. And so if you don't know that journal, you need to get to know it. It's practical. Yeah, we did show that slide, but I'm happy to talk about that. We have two that are accredited. We have 18 in process. At the 19 in process. I'm sorry? And so that's 21 altogether, Liza, so two are accredited. Yeah. So you know, that's 21 together, so that's close to half. It's amazing progress considering they lagged behind the locals when they first got started, and we kind of teased ASTO about that. But you know, the ASTO's done a good job of promoting, and then we've got the NIFI connection has done a good job. But yeah, so, and a number of the ones that aren't in our system yet, we've made contact with all of them. And while admittedly there are a small handful that even one in the other session, after the other session, told me they were working under the radar because politically they can't talk about accreditation. Can you imagine? But, I mean, we know that's the reality. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, why don't you, yeah. Since you're from one of those.
Yeah.
And it's a great question. And so thank you, Jim Franco, for answering the specific question. I'll answer it more generally. From my platform, I get asked a lot about what you just alluded to last, and that is, why would a national organization come in and tell a health department what to do? And the answer is we don't. Our standards are deliberately set to be about the what of public health and not the how or the specific programmatic choices. And so the what in terms of best practices in engaging the community and identifying those local needs. Usually if I can get a skeptic to listen long enough to hear that, they hear that, you know, it really is our desire to strengthen the health department's ability to hear what those local needs are and to address those accordingly. So, you know, it couldn't be further from the truth that we're trying to tell the health department what to do as far as the kinds of services they offer and what their partnerships look like. We're trying to do just the opposite, and that is to give the health department to strengthen their ability to serve that local community the way it should be served. So that's one thing that we talk about a lot. The second thing, in all honesty, related to the political environment is FAB launched about the time that the early debates over health reform had surfaced. And so for some strange reason that I will still not understand, but then I don't purport to understand everything that goes on in the political world anyway, we got linked with health reform. And so there for a while, I got asked a lot of questions. Was FAB organized as some kind of conspiracy by CDC for the government to carry out some part of health reform at a local level? Well, you know, first of all, I talk about the first paper that was written about accreditation was written 90 years ago. And it's taken us 90 years to get to this point. We also, as you all know, but it's a surprise sometimes to folks who think that we came as a result of health reform. We've been working on this for about 10 years, deliberately. The fact that we happened to launch about the time that that controversy also launched, it was just coincidental. And so if people listen long enough to hear that, then they usually kind of back off, which is part of what happened in Kansas as well. The last thing, and I'm getting old, and so I get cynical. I spoke to a Board of Health not long ago who was doing the very good stuff they need to do about going through why should we be accredited. It's a big Board of Health, a big county, and they were having that very good discussion that they need to have. And so we went through all of this. Well, what does it prove? What does it show? What's the return on investment? You know, and only they can really answer that. But at the end of the day, what I said was, you know, when health departments around you are accredited, I would encourage you to have the conversation about what are you going to say about why you chose deliberately not to be. Can you imagine a hospital choosing not to be accredited? Can you imagine a school or a university or college choosing not to be accredited? It is a choice, and they can make it. But I would not want to be part of a board who had to explain why they deliberately chose not to do that. So that's the other conversation. And lastly, I would say to your question, if you look back at Joint Commission, and Lon Berkeley is very often in the room, Joint Commission has a basic accreditation for hospitals, and then as health systems have become more sophisticated, they've got different modules, if you will, for different aspects. So my last job as dean, we had 5 hospitals on our campus. They were all Joint Commission accredited. Never once did Joint Commission tell us whether we had to offer pediatric oncology services. But once we decided to offer those, then they accredited the services that we chose to offer on the basis that we chose to offer those. And FAB's really no different than that. I could get on that soapbox a while, but I won't. But thank you for the question. Any other questions or comments for our speakers? You would have never gotten that done. And I don't believe there was anybody from a national or federal government there to testify. It was all local folks handling local issues, which should happen. So I hope you think that we're still on the right track. FAB is doing as well as it is because of the support that we've had from the practitioners. We are there for health departments. We are a consensus-based performance standard-setting organization. So if at any point you hear something that seems weird or you see something that we've published or said or done that you think isn't consistent with that philosophy, then you need to let us know. Because that's how we grow and improve and implement our own big QI. So with that, thank you very much, and I hope you enjoy the rest of APHA.